Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
This is Pretty Much Pop, a culture podcast. Yet someone among our number is a traitor to this podcast, and I guess against culture itself. Today we're discussing the TV show The Traitors. It started in the Netherlands 2021. It's been a hit in the US, the UK, France, a dozen other places. US just finished its second season. I'm Mark Lintzenmeyer, and I think my colleague Al Baker is the traitor because he's a dirty limey.
Well, I saw Sarah touch her hair at the beginning of this recording, and I am laughably overconfident in my ability to read body language, so I think that it is Sarah.
Wow, how dare you? Because of your affinity, no obsession with horror, murder, if you will. Lawrence, I believe you are a traitor and should be banished.
This is Lawrence Ware, and I absolutely believe that it's the man who made me change my entire recording device before this podcast began, and it is Mark who is the traitor.
All right, enough of that.
We're clearly very divided.
Good bit. Do you feel, audience, like you've gotten to peer, into an active sociological experiment to see how four people react under unnatural circumstances? That's at least
or
I was reading.
Dress.
I was reading an interview with the fellow who created this and tried to shop it around for quite a few years before it got picked up in Norway initially, and then once that was piloted, just immediately sold it to a bunch, such that I don't know that the US one came out significantly later than the UK one, or I don't know. I watched the Australia one all the way through because Lawrence said that one was the best, and I did like the fact. I don't know, this is something for us to get into, is sort of the variations on how you could compose these things, whether it's regular people, whether it's all celebrities, which was the initial idea in the Netherlands, or now specifically reality TV stars, which is what season two of the US one was exclusively. Give us some opening sort of thoughts. I generally avoid this kind of TV, but was sucked into this one. And I know we had talked about doing a Survivor episode, but I was too cowardly to get caught up on that or even watch a whole season. Maybe we'll get to it. But, you know, it happened that I was already into this and you guys had experienced it. It seems like it is a sensation. I don't know. Is this exceptional for this kind of thing, or is this just par for the course in your experience?
I hadn't watched Traitors before we decided to do it for the show, and I have seldom been so turned around on a show's concept during watching it, because I went into this ready to basically not love it, because I'm very lukewarm on reality game shows. I don't like Real Housewives-y Jersey Shore genre reality TV at all, but The Traitors really, really got its hooks into me. I haven't seen the Australian version. I think the British version is strongly superior to the American one, and I would love to fight about that. But in general, I think the show is fantastically interesting, and it feels really new and interesting compared to a bunch of the other kind of similar shows that have come before it. And I don't know whether there's just something about this show that appeals to me or whether there is some kind of important rooted difference, but it feels really special. I've had a real blast watching it.
So when I got the memo that this was what we were going to be talking about, I was like, what? Is this a joke? Like, what were the boys thinking when deciding to do this? And then I saw the first
boys,
couple of...
Come on, the boys. Come on.
Yeah, I said it. I said it, Lawrence.
And you actually audibly, what were the boys thinking? That's what you actually said out loud?
I did.
Wow.
I said it out loud to Josh. And he said, maybe that should be your opener. But I watched the first, the first four or five episodes. And I was like, I cannot stand this show. I hate it. It seems like a ripoff of the mole or a ripoff of the party game mafia or something.
Oh, yeah.
It just seems so stupid. And then once I got into the second half, I figured out what the big deal was. And I am setting aside Alan Cumming, who is a national treasure.
He is an international treasure, a delight.
He is delightful in this show.
He is
absolutely delightful. The best host by far.
By far.
Oh, here come out his British stuff.
He's an international house of pancakes. Sorry, go ahead. Yes.
Very well-dressed house of pancakes. I watched an episode of the Australian version, and I watched an episode of the UK version, and I actually really thought that the contestants were better, mm-hmm. you know, abroad than the, you know, I watched both seasons here, and I liked it and everything, but oh my God, I really didn't need it to be about a bunch of reality stars. It was much better with real people.
Tell me
I'm wrong, Lawrence.
Yeah, you seem like you had the most background in this, that you'd already watched multiple versions.
Okay. So let me give you guys the background on this. All right. So before we even, I had no idea we were ever going to talk about this. It's just something I was one day rummaging around on Peacock looking for something to watch. And I stumbled upon the Traitors. I believe the first one I stumbled upon was Traitors UK, the first season. I watched it. I agree with Al that I think the UK version is far superior to every other version. It is so good. At least that first season was. And then I watched Traitors Australia. Then I watched the first season of Traitors in America. And then I most recently watched the second season of Traitors in America. And now I'm working on the second season of Traitors UK currently. Now, the Traitors, it just hooked me immediately. Because, so Sarah said a few moments ago about the mole. I remember the mole, the very first mole. It came out like maybe 10, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was on ABC, and I really, really enjoyed that, but it didn't get a second season.
Say what it is, because a lot of people are I didn't know what that was. I had to look it up.
Yeah, go ahead, Sarah. What is, you probably do a better job than me. What is the mole on ABC?
Well, it's very similar to Traitors, where you have a group of people who get to travel all over the world looking for clues, and one of them is a mole who sabotages these people as they're trying to look for cues and add to a pot where eventually the winner wins at the very end.
Right.
And you have to guess who that mole is. And I think there were two seasons.
Were there two seasons? I only remember one.
And the host was Anderson Cooper, who is also a fantastic host. And then they brought it back to life, I think, last year, and it wasn't very good.
On Netflix. I never watched it on Netflix. But anyway, so I watched that mole show. And I enjoy. I think I only watched one season. It could have been two seasons. But I never got another show to kind of hit that itch. And what I'm talking about is a show that is full of like gossip. It's like that's what the entire show was built upon.
Yeah.
Like people are like sitting around gossiping, being very suspicious of one another, but also being very genteel with one another. Right. So you're simultaneously. It's like if Mark and I were like in this competition, me and Mark would be like, hey, buddy, how you doing? Let's drink some beers. And then at night, I'd be like, Mark, you fucking did it. Like, that's kind of the way that it is. Right. It's a mixture of genteelness and kindness, but also suspicion. And so it's this uncomfortable mixture of like you're simultaneously really having fun and having friends and making friends, but ultimately at the core of it, you may have to lie to this person that you just made a friend with in order to win the game. And I just loved it. It riveted me. And so I watched it. I watched the second season of the American one with my kids because they know those reality stars, right? Mm. And so Phaedra is a household name around here. We know who Phaedra is. Like, she's been in a lot of stuff over the past 10 years. Housewives, all kinds of stuff. I think she's on Married with Medicine right now, all kinds
of stuff. She's very charming.
And she's also really over the top. Like, if you watch the stuff she's wearing, she's over the top. So the reality people drew them in, but then the lying and suspicion stuff, like, kept them there. And we loved it. Like, I have watched so many episodes of this. Now, my kids did not like the second season of the UK one because I think they kind of ratchet up a little bit of the cheekiness, right? So there's like a scene where she hands to the camera an envelope. It's just over the top, right? That America never did. But the show is really, really good of giving you like a reality feel, but like this suspicion and lying overture with it. And it's just, it's riveting television if you're looking for something fun like that. Now, if you're like a person who doesn't like reality TV like at all, and you don't like Survivor or The Floor is Lava or none of that stuff, this won't work for you. But if you like that stuff, this is riveting television. I absolutely loved it.
I got to say, though, Lawrence, I'm the guy who doesn't like reality TV at all. And this show works so well for me. So I would say, even if you don't like this kind of stuff, because this show is so pure. So many other like reality game shows, which have like lying and deception and backstabbing as a part of the like milieu of what's going on, like in Survivor or in The Bachelor or like wherever else, people have got to lie and backstab each other to get through. But this game is baked in. You can't be surprised that people are lying and backstabbing. One of the wonderful things about it is just because you're spending like 2 weeks among these people as a contestant, you form bonds, you get close to them. And this is why I think the older seasons of the show I've watched do get better and more interesting in the second halves, because by that point, everyone has forgotten that they're in a game. And these are real people with real relationships. Mm. And you can see people mentally falling apart, mentally and emotionally being permanently
I'm worried
damaged.
About the mental health of some of these contestants. Yeah. I'm really worried about, they need counseling once this show is over. Like, I think you're right, Al.
I think too, like one of the differences between, and that might be why it took me a little bit to kind of hook into the show, was like The Mole, you're also as a viewer, you're guessing who the mole is, whereas that's totally taken out of the equation with Traitors. You are absolutely like, you're there to watch these relationships deteriorate, basically. You know, it's you're there to watch people lie to each other, which is really entertaining, unfortunately.
I was very suspicious at first, just in, wow, somebody took. So it is the party game, if you've never played this, Mafia. I've played it at family gatherings. Sometimes they call it Werewolf. It just depends on sort of what the, but that.
Is this something you can buy? What is
no,
this
it's
game?
Just, I've never heard it, I mean, there is
no. It's just like charades or something.
There are
no
box props. Versions of it, but
yeah it's like you can do it game. With nothing. Like it doesn't require any equipment. It's just, you know, we're going to tap a couple people and you're going to be the killers. And then there's nothing else to it except the judging phase. So slapping in 20 minutes in the middle of we're going to do an activity together, where actually the incentives are like, it's not like The Mole where anybody's trying to undermine everything. Everybody is trying to win at
the
competitions.
Yeah, everybody wants to win.
So it really doesn't tell you anything. So when I was trying to get through season 2 American, I only got through up to like episode 7. So I don't know. We're not going to spoil actual endings, let's just say right now. We can talk sort of in general about the dynamics and the situations.
Yeah,
and
I don't remember anyone anyway.
But so I think you're safe, whatever part you want to watch or listen to. But yeah, I was kind of struck. I started fast-forwarding through the competitions just because they don't matter as far as the overall game goes. It is
too.
Just like spending time with these people. And if you know, they're pretty interesting stunts as far as these things go. I don't know how. I watched the first season of Survivor at the time and have not watched it since. So I don't know how these, let's climb down a mountain, which was one in the Australia one. I'm like, is this really safe? most of them are, even though they it's sort of campy horror, like there's no actual danger whatsoever. But, you know, do you think that is how you would advise that just that the games are a waste of time just forward over them?
I don't think the idea of challenges is a waste of time. I think the kind of challenges they have, which seem to me to be entirely a result of like the formula of reality TV genres, because they are survivor type challenges
they're doing.
And I was thinking the whole way through, but they do seem like a waste of time. And the incentives are weird. The show tries to make a big deal all the time of like, it's important to be seen to do well in the challenges because the traitors will want to keep strong players in to maximize the eventual prize money. But I never saw that figure into the traitors strategizing. It's always,
I don't remember how
can we keep ourselves safe? Which is absolutely right. So yeah, the challenges are completely pointless, except for the couple of occasions where the very nature of the challenge invites mistrust and suspicion among the players. So like where they have to say, there's one in the UK one where they have the dinner party and they have to say, who is the most trusted person here? And that results in drama. Like everyone has to name who their most trusted person is. And the last person who hasn't been named as a most trusted person something happens to them. Those kinds of get things that like heighten the interpersonal drama would be far more effective, I think, than the survivor type challenges. Because, yeah, it's not what anyone's there for. And I'm glad you said that you fast forwarded through the challenges, Mark, because yeah, I did too.
I think we all did. Yeah, we all did.
Can I also say the cheap ass production company reused every single challenge between the US and the UK?
Absolutely.
Maybe even some of the same costumes.
Is it the same castle? Is it the same castle too?
It's the same castle, but it's also exactly the same challenges.
Oh, the same castle is in the UK?
It's the same Scottish castle?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Which is great. It's a great castle. Reuse the castle. You can't build a new castle. But make it, it's not even that they reuse the props. They're exactly the same games.
Yeah.
But it works, though, because it's the people that make it work. It's not the challenges, or it's the people.
We've watched Survivor this whole time, and Survivor has really changed a lot. But I kept thinking about that, the first couple seasons of Survivor and the relationships between the contestants on these, the different iterations of Traitors. And there was so much similarity. There was always one guy who would say, well, it's just a game. I'm not taking anything personally. But you know what? Every single other person did, you know, and that's what makes it interesting. And that's what made Survivor such a hit when it first came out. And it's still, you know, a popular show and stuff, but I think Survivor does a much better job of making the challenges meaningful because it's a way to bring the teams together. It's a way you win together. You win stuff like shelter, you know, things to help the shelter, something to help with your fire, or even sometimes food prizes and stuff. And that is all kind of team building. And it also can be something that divides team members too. So if you're not, you know, a great swimmer or something, or if you're not great at puzzles, that can be something that'll put you on the chopping block later on. But it's still the most interesting parts of Survivor, and also the most interesting parts of Traitors, is when you get those groups together and they start scheming and talking about each other behind their backs. Just like you said, Lawrence, like they're all just gossiping about each other behind their backs. And I thought it was so interesting that, especially in the second season of the US version, is they started playing as like kind of mini teams. Right? So you would have these people who would form alliances with each other.
Yeah, you're right. They did. You know? They really did.
And I thought that was a really interesting way to go as far as strategy. I definitely thought this show got better and better as it went. I kind of want to go back and see the Australian and UK versions now.
Well, let's talk about the difference in the makeup of who they put on the show. Because the Australian one I really liked because it was all regular people. And
that's too.
What British was season
I
one at least.
I don't like regular
people. Oh, no, it's
regular
so people, much better.
But regular people
that's really
boring.
Interesting.
But they were regular people that had...
They weren't.
That had skills that seemed relevant. Like, I'm a chess grandmaster. I can see forward. So I'm a psychic. I'm a former police investigator who is now a criminal defense lawyer.
Time out.
I'm an electrician.
What's up with the random? Because in season two of UK, is there like a big psychic thing going on in the UK where a lot of people are walking around? Is that a thing?
There's a clairvoyant on the show, and yeah, there's psychics here. People like psychics here.
It's just weird. It would be in two seasons of the same. Like country is speaking on what's going on in the UK.
They keep recycling stuff anyway. Why not recycle characters?
It's strange. Like energies and crystals. It's weird.
It is funny how almost none of those skills proved of any use on the show.
They never help
at all.
They never help.
What a surprise!
One of my favorite things about the show is it just reveals how completely shit people are at noticing lies and deception. Like, no strategy has ever, you guys, like, people have seen more of the show than me, but nothing I've seen has ever worked.
Never worked.
The first time anyone gets a trick, apart from in, like, the fight, when you're down to, like, five or six people, maybe then people can start making, like, informed decisions. But it's so funny to see how many people are so sure. In the first couple of episodes, people they've known for 2 days, and they have no relevant information at all, but they are willing to go all the way out on the line.
Yeah. And it does sort of, you know how people say, oh, you have to earn my trust. No, trust is absolutely just given. You were not earning trust at all. Trust is something that you lose. You know, it's so funny how trusting people are, even though they think they're such skeptics. They're not.
Yeah. Because everyone comes in the first episode and they're like, I'm going to be so brutal. I'm such a shark. You know, I know how to play this game.
And by episode three, they're wide open. They're wide open episode three.
Everyone gets their feelings hurt. This, by the way, is one reason I prefer not having celebrities, because I think the reality stars in the American version are more hardened and absolutely are more kind of brutal and tactical in
a
way which...
I completely disagree, because it's the fact that they are so hardened that when... Man, I do not want to ruin it, but when something happens, they are so heartbroken in that the reality show. So they pretend to be real hard, but then when something goes left on them, they're absolutely heartbroken, and that's what I loved. I loved how it was. And also, like, there really is no genuine strategy with this. And so this is the biggest, like, commercial for telling people that clairvoyance isn't real, because all these clairvoyants come on this show and they can't see a fucking thing. Like, they can't see nothing. And so it is just amazing how this show kind of cuts through all of that scheming, and there really is no genuine strategy to win the show. It's not luck, it's skill, but I don't know how you win this show. I don't know what the strategy would be.
What would be your winning strategy?
No idea.
Mark. Oh, no, you were going to say, you've been waiting to say something for ages, but I also want to know what your winning strategy would be.
Yeah, I want to know what everybody's strategy would be.
Part of this is, I was wondering about who you're rooting for, right? Is it pretty consistent that you're rooting for the traitors unless... you know, they're particularly repellent, right? At least I found in the three instances of parts of seasons that I was watching.
I like horror, so I'm rooting for the bad guys. I don't know.
I also generally root for the traitors. You want them to do a good job, and you get furious at them when they do something stupid.
Yeah.
But yes.
One of the, without spoiling too much, one of the series that I've watched, the traitors win, and the manner in which the traitors won made it feel not good. As a finale, I was rooting for the traitors the whole way through, but then when they won, I felt bad. I only felt good when they didn't.
Celebrities versus non-celebrities. What doesn't work is mixing them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what US season one did, because yes, it is these hardened people who know how to play these games and then some ordinary suckers. And you feel really bad that these people have gotten their feelings hurt. And you got to have either the normies or the power players, not a mix of them.
I would have to say, like, without spoiling, but the endings of these shows aren't necessarily very satisfying.
No, like, I knew you was going to say it. I disagree with you. I knew you were going to say that, but I disagree with you.
I know, I know. But
it's the best ending of any reality show I've ever seen. It's so good.
But when you, at the end of Survivor, there is a sense, there is sort of a consensus, I think, among the audience, among the viewers, and even among the contestants, you know, of like, yeah, I guess that's the, even if it wasn't the person you were rooting for, like, yeah, I guess I can see why this happened this way, and this is sort of the way the things that should go. Whereas I don't get that feeling when watching Traitors.
And it's,
you know,
so
I feel
wonderful.
Like, oh my
and it's
God,
so it's wonderful.
There are people here who are hurt. There are people here who
I love
maybe
it.
Have won
Let
and
them
also
cry.
Feel guilty.
Let
you know,
them
just
eat cake.
It's,
I love it.
It's a cruel game. It's a real cruel game, for sure.
It is. Let it be cruel. That's what it's supposed to be, cruel. Let it be cruel.
I thought there was something against Schadenfreude in the past when we've talked about the Nathan Fielder shows and stuff like that. And now you're fine with it here because people signed up for it.
This show's been difficult for me.
Yes, I am. I am, Mark. I'm very fine with it.
Because I do not like the kind of things that these shows put themselves through. But I think the fact that it is just at its core about lying and deceit, and that is absolutely what people signed up to do, makes it easier rather than like, I'm going on a dating show and I'm going to don't necessarily think through that I'm going to be emotionally manipulated while I do it. But on the other hand, I'm probably just being hypocritical because I really like this show and I want to be morally comfortable with watching it.
I mean, I think that the people on the show, they knew what they were signing up for, particularly people in second seasons or something. Like, they knew what this show was, right? And so if you go into the show and you get your feelings hurt, You signed up for that. That is the show. It's not like it's like 8-year-olds and they're like manipulating 8-year-olds and making the cry.
American season three, all 8-year-olds.
No, it better not be. But like genuinely, like you signed up for this. It's like going on Hell's Kitchen, getting mad that Gordon Ramsay yells at you. Like, this is what you signed up for. And so if you signed up for this and you know what you signed up for, then I want it to be as ruthless as possible, as cruel as possible, all the way to the end. Like, go all the way to the end. I do not want this, everybody has consensus and we all agree this is the best player and so they should win. No, I want it to be cutthroat to the end. If you're going to do it, do it. Don't play with it. Don't pussyfoot with it. Do it. Go all the way in.
I wonder how long it's going to take before this show, people have been watching Survivor now for decades and know all of their tricks, so much so that they have to continue to change the show. This show could end up as like that, with people who go in and their feelings aren't hurt anymore, that they are playing, you know, a different game by the end. They're playing a far different game by the end of the show as they were for the first two seasons. I absolutely see this show changing pretty quickly, actually, because we've been doing this reality game show thing for a long time now.
It may.
As long as it has to keep to the core of like emotionally destroying the participants. It can't let people get hardened to it. Maybe that means it's only got a few years in it as a show.
It may not go that far, but honestly, I can simultaneously seeing it not going that long or it going very long. Because, and Al commented on this a little bit earlier, when people get into the show, they're thinking, I'm playing a game. I'm just going to play the game. And then by episode 3, episode 4, episode 5, they're so emotionally invested that they forget that they're playing a game and now they're getting their feelings hurt. So I don't know if this show is just designed in such a way that at first people will probably go in playing a game and then they'll just get invested. And then they'll be crying by episode 7. Like, it just might be the design of the show. It may be just the design.
And they're also not getting a ton of sleep, right? They're also going through some challenges that look pretty challenging.
Yeah.
You know, I think that they're probably, I mean, they're not starving, but I think
they're probably wearing down.
Both, you know, mentally, you know, and physically. And that definitely wears you down. Yeah.
It does.
And
those, it wears you down.
The round tables I have to do every night, which are brutal, especially in the early stages where it is just chaos reigning everywhere because, and obviously that's by design, but it's just beautiful how easy it is to get people to behave like absolute lunatics.
Yeah. And they don't even know what they're saying. It's like, they're making all of these accusations and they don't know what they're saying.
At the beginning, it's like he brushed his hair to the left today when he normally brushes it to the right. He's got to be a traitor. Like at the beginning, they have no idea what they're doing, but they're invested. And the longer it goes, the more invested they get. I think the show could run forever. It really could because it's just the design of it is so smart that it just welcomes all of this kind of variation. It just depends on the characters. You have to get good characters, but the show itself will work.
The like serendipity of the format, the fact that it can go any way at any time, and there's absolutely no guarantee that the best person will win.
No.
It does run the risk of having unsatisfying stories in it, but it also makes possible some incredible twists. And like the end of the first UK season is an absolute masterpiece of suspense.
I don't even remember the end of that season.
Well, no, why did he write your name? That whole thing.
I don't remember. I gotta watch it again. I don't remember.
It seems like there's a fundamental disanalogy between what's going on when you're like trying to detect a murder in a murder mystery show or something, and this, because you know that the people were picked randomly. It's not that they're like that these people are actually morally inferior and you can detect that somehow. Like, you just seem like a liar. That was my reference, you know, in my opening of why an irrational reason for suspecting Al is because I just don't like people with beards. Like, that has nothing to do with it. They were not chosen based on their beard type or whatever.
Do you mean the traitors?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think? Because maybe that's as it goes on. Then maybe it becomes a little more real because it's like, well, you've had to lie on a daily basis and that just weighs on you in a way that it doesn't for somebody who's a faithful.
I read one of the Alan Cumming articles and they said that they really, And maybe this is just for the US version, but they really pick those traders who they're going to choose. They want somebody who's going to be good TV because they're going to get most of the screen time. And they definitely are very careful about picking who those traders are. And it seemed like they did that too in the Australian version. I only watched one episode, but they picked some pretty interesting people for that, you know, for that show. Mm. I feel like they definitely, this is not a random thing at all.
Mm. Oh no.
They pick some people who know how to be on camera and be interesting on camera.
It's real uncomfortable when they're bad at it. The first season of the US Traitors, who was that? There was one of the traitors who just shit.
Yeah, it was terrible. I mean, I bet there is a screening process, as there are with most reality TV shows, and they're doing screen tests and all the kind of stuff, and they're probably picking the people who the camera most responds to. Mm-hmm. Because you're right, Sarah, those people are going to be on the camera a lot, explaining their criteria, all the kind of stuff, like why they did what they did. And so, yeah, I think there is probably something going on in the selection process of who the traders are going to be. Also with the faithful, probably, right? But they definitely are very careful with who they pick to be the traders. Because if I pick Al to be a trader, it's going to be a terrible show. But if I pick Mark, it's going to be good, right? You know, they're thinking like that.
No, Sarah, you pick, of the four of us, Sarah's the one you picked to be the traitor. But that's where they're in danger of getting formulaic, I guess. Is that one of the things you were thinking, Mark? Because there's a kind of standard set of people that they seem to pick for the traitors.
They always pick like a sweet person.
Who are the people
person.
That people don't suspect.
Yeah, it's all like a sweet person to be a traitor of some sort, like something like that. Yeah.
You asked about strategy, and I brought up the whole, it's really mostly the traders that get to do strategic things, right? That they're trying to engineer who's going to be up for the vote next and then who they're going to assassinate. And they're trying to do this a couple in advance. And I just got to a point on season two where one of the traders is really under the spotlight and he decides that he gives a big long speech pointing to another one of the traders that was not otherwise suspected by the group at all. And nobody believes him. So he gets defeated. And only like one person there was like, hey, this guy like won Survivor twice. He is not an idiot. Would he give us a random wrong person? Mm-hmm. Like, no, he wanted them to say, okay, we'll trust you this time. And then find out that the person he was pointing at really was a traitor. Mm-hmm. And that they would, you know, whether or not he was a traitor, she was definitely, people couldn't think that far ahead.
Here's the thing though. I'm not going to spoil it, but that, I know the episode you're talking about. That episode, it starts a chain of events. I'll just say that. It starts a chain of events that leads to something. And so there is something to that. Like there was one person who was like, hey, he wouldn't do that. And it starts something. It gets them thinking in a particular way. And that is the way you fail the show, is if you get attention zeroed in on you early, it may be minuscule attention, but if you get like small attention zeroed in on you earlier, that stuff comes up later on, which is why who they pick to be traitors is so important. Because if you pick a traitor who will throw another traitor under the bus, that's going to end up with both of them probably being gone by episode 8. So there is some strategy there. I don't know what it is, but there's strategy there that kind of comes to fruition eventually.
But that's why I felt like the gameplay in the US version, especially the second season when it was all reality, quote unquote, celebrities, was such a, it was so different.
They're celebrities.
They're celebrities. They're Bravo celebrities or whatever, isn't that what they're called?
I guarantee you, if you were trying to get into an exclusive restaurant in Philly and they were trying to get into an exclusive restaurant in Philly, they get in before you.
Oh, 100%. So, I agree.
I mean, so they're celebrities. They're celebrities.
They're professional reality TV stars.
They're professional reality TV stars. So you already go in. So they are a known quantity, right, when they go in. So people already have an idea of who they are. Many of them have also already played, you know, reality game shows before. So they have this experience. So people have this known quantity from day one, whereas you don't have that in the Australian and the UK versions, which is, I think, what makes it so interesting, because they have to get to know each other. They develop these relationships, you know? And I would say that that would make it, if not more interesting, just a very different type of game.
When you have professionals, they know how to, because when I found out that the American one used like professional reality stars, I was like, oh, I don't know, how's this going to change it? And I thought, well, maybe it'll just make it more entertaining to watch. And it did make some of it more entertaining to watch. Like, everybody on that show knows how to perform to camera, like, the pieces when they're sitting in the confession chairs or whatever. Everyone's making great bitchy comments. It's wonderful. But a lot of the humanity just wasn't there. And the core of the game...
I completely disagree. Completely disagree. Go ahead, Al. Finish your thought.
To your point earlier, Lawrence, about seeing these people crumble and how rewarding that can be, and that does feel good. But part of what makes Trazers as a format work so well for me, I think, is exactly this thing of people come in thinking, I'm going to play a game, and then they get hit over the head with the social cost of playing the game that they've committed to. And the less of a professional front that the contestants have, the more engaging that story becomes, basically, because you get to see the whole story play out on their faces. Mm-hmm. There's no point where they're putting on a good front, or the people who are putting on a good front are like streets ahead of everybody else in the pack.
Or they just cry once and leave the show entirely.
Yeah.
Okay, so hold on. All right. Dear listener, Mark told you earlier that we would not be spoiling this show. Mark lied to you because I'm about to start saying things that are spoilery. So if you do not want to hear any spoilers for this show, dear listener, and I'm looking out for you. I'm looking out for you, dear listener. If you want to hear any spoilers for the show, dear listener, please fast forward 2 minutes, 3 minutes. I don't know how long this is going to go, but I'm about to be spoilery. I'm not going to spoil the ending, but I'm going to spoil little bits of this show because okay. Al is completely wrong. So I need to make my point. Okay, Al, the reason why you're wrong here is because what happened in season 2 of the American version of Traitors is that there were people there who already had relationships before they got on the show. A couple of those people, one of them was CT, and I forgot the name of the woman, but they had been on a show together. And then there was Phaedra. And I forgot the name of the black woman, but they had been on Real Housewives together. So they had pre-existing.
Tamara. Yeah.
Yeah.
Same with
they
Tamara.
Had pre-existing relationships, and they had to lie to each other, and they had to undermine each other despite having these pre-existing relationships. And while it was very cold at the beginning of the season, towards the end of the season, when they started to undermine these pre-existing relationships, it got really hot. People were like Phaedra, for example, did this. She looked in the eyes of a person that she had a good friendship, like a genuine friendship with, and she lied to her straight up to her face. And the person was like, oh, she wouldn't lie to me because we're good friends. She wouldn't do that. She knows this is different. It got real. And then there was a episode where CT, I forgot what happened, but I'm not gonna say what happened, but CT had to do something, and he like undermined a person that he had known for like 10 years, and it got really real. I'm saying that you're right. At the beginning, they were reality show professionals. They were really good. But by the end of the show, when the rubber meet the road, they got really, really real, and the emotions got really raw.
I like when CT would scan the other players looking for cancers and various... Sorry.
Okay, that's terrible. All right, listener, come back, listener. I'm done.
I mean, I think that's... I haven't seen season 2. That does sound awesome. But Mark and Sarah, what do you think? How do you prefer?
I think I'm going to prefer regular people, but the bulk of the episodes that I've watched were the seasons 1 and 2 of the US version, which had celebrities. And I think season 2 was better than season 1, and season 1 had a mix of, you know, regular people and celebrities.
Yeah, I don't like that mix, because you're right, Sarah. I don't like that mix.
A recipe for heartbreak. Although even among the regular people in Australia, like some of them were just suckers, and some of them were more serious, willing to deceive players. And like, I don't know how you could remove that dichotomy from anywhere.
It's only good to be a hard ass if you're a traitor. If you're a faithful hard ass, you're not making it to the final because you're a threat and you're going down. The people who are in the final are always traitors and like a few of the loveliest, like most cuddly people.
Well, that's why you have, I mean, strategy. I mean, we did see strategy among the faithfuls. But one other thing too, I think as a viewer, we like to see ourselves reflected in these contestants a lot of times, which is, you know, kind of fun, you know, in the back of your head. Wow, could I ever do Survivor? Could I ever do The Mole? Yes, I could definitely do The Mole. But
I knew you were evil.
Because the Traitors version has like all of these, like I can't relate to any of those people. I can't relate to anybody who's on the Traitors US version because I'm not a real housewife. I'm not, you know, I haven't been on Survivor before. I haven't been in the spotlight like that. Whereas, you know, you look at the contestants who are on the Australian version, you know, you've got an attorney, you've got somebody who's, you know, a personal trainer, you've got somebody who's an electrician, you know, it's like, oh, you know, if you're not an electrician, you probably know one, you know? So it's something that I think kind of can draw audiences in, I think maybe more successfully.
I have a question, and this is a meta question, but do any of you guys watch The Bachelor? Anybody watch that?
Not anymore.
Tried it, don't like it.
I was wondering how this relates to a show like that, which I avoid like the plague. So no, I've never watched any of it.
I don't like it, but I do wonder the heartbreak. Is it higher on this show or higher on The Bachelor? Because it feels like this show might be a little bit more heartbreaking. Because on The Bachelor, I don't know. Because in this show, you have investment with people and they turn out to like backstab you. Whereas with The Bachelor, you're going after a guy, you might be sad you don't get him. But no one like, do they backstab? Like, I just wonder which show would be more heartbreaking, The Bachelor or this show?
They do, but in The Bachelor, as I understand it, all of the contestants are in direct competition with one another. There can only be one winner right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. So there's no, like, trust can only ever go a very limited way on a show like that. But on The Traitors, there is at least a conceivable possibility that, like, it's conceivable that after three episodes, 17 faithful, like, have eliminated all the traitors and everyone gets a nice little pot of money and can all go home and no one has to betray anyone. And then it's feasible in The Traitors for the faithful to win together. The design of the show makes it so that there's always this feeling of we are so close. And then it takes it away. And because it's inevitably the betrayal of someone they thought was a friend who takes it away, it's really harsh.
Yeah. And I would argue that The Bachelor, until you're getting down to the end, I don't know, I can't speak for these women, but I don't think their hearts are too broken if you're out of there after, you know, on day three.
I wonder if it's worth with the Golden Bachelor because they're probably close to death. I don't know. Never mind.
Nice, Lawrence. Wow.
This was my last chance.
I would think that, you know, the reason I don't like shows like The Bachelor.
Was that mean? I'm sorry.
The reason I don't like shows like The Bachelor or Jersey Shore or whatever is at least my perception, and maybe I just haven't watched enough of these, is that it's all about just judging these people. Whereas this show, at least there's some sort of game theory. Like, I wish more of the interview stuff was them saying smart things about their strategy and what they're trying to do, as opposed to like, we just got to get rid of those traitors. I feel so afraid. Like, just reminding the audience of what that's not paying attention or that just wants to see their emotional reactions. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that nobody's falling in love on the show. I like the fact that it's not that kind of trash.
Season one. Someone fell in love?
Oh,
they talk in the after.
I watched the after talks.
Right, in the after talks.
Okay.
Right.
Andy Cohen will get all that out of you.
Oh, there's some stuff going on off camera? Who knew?
The final episode of season one, where everybody's there almost, but not everybody gets invited to talk, or at least it was edited down. So, like, one woman, her only presence is, let me really expose my breasts to show them. Like,
oh my God. You know,
they don't let her talk the entire time. She's just a giant pair of breasts over somebody else's shoulder. Anyway, it is revealed in that two people have dated subsequently to the show.
Yeah.
That is not the imagery I was looking for there, Mark.
That's another reason, though, that I started to resent some of the challenges because, there's just not enough opportunity for. I want to hear that. And I know it wouldn't be great telly, but I want to watch the traitors talk for 20 solid minutes about what their strategy is.
Me too.
And I want the show to give the faithful more time to like break into groups and talk about, because they get to catch like little moments to chat between challenges and whatever else. But I'd like it if the show gave them more explicit opportunity to strategize.
Yeah, I wish that we could see how those alliances form. I feel like we're already too late. We already see them as they've already formed. I want to see how those relationships develop. Yeah, I could use far less of the challenges because it doesn't seem like they're supposedly there so that they can earn money, but it seems like they end up having the whole pot to fight over by the end anyway. So who
cares? Is that the way it works out every time? That's what I wonder. Like, are there anywhere
would
they
not
just
be remotely different?
No,
if
idea.
They had a fixed
no
prize pot,
it's still going to be $250,000.
Why is the prize money always more than twice as much in America as it is in the UK? That's really unfair.
It's not. I don't think it's higher.
Well, the
I don't
UK
know.
Is a poor country, so that's the reason why. Al.
It's £125,000 in.
It's because the pound is so good.
It's about $150,000. No, just your.
So probably the Japanese yeah. version where it's yen and it has to be like 4 million yen is much more impressive.
It's a real insight into the economy, though, because they go around in the UK show and ask, like, what's everyone going to do with the money? And everyone's answer is, I have a significant housing problem and I need like tens of thousands of pounds
all,
to solve
true.
It.
Oh they God. All say that. They all
and
say
I guess
that.
If you put,
that is
if you
so
put
true.
One of the dangers of putting normal people in the American one is it would be like, I've got medical bills I need to pay. So.
What's the tax on prize money in the UK, Al?
Zero.
Really?
Oh, so it's half here.
No way.
They take out 50% here.
Wow.
That's because you're all Protestant, so you don't like gambling.
Holy crap. Are you serious, Al? Is zero tax?
I think so. I had a friend who was a professional poker player, and he told me that there's
crazy
0% on gambling wins. So either he was telling the truth or he's in trouble with the... revenue and customs.
And you just told on them.
Just a little more on the sort of how we're relating to these people as people. I noticed in the Australian one, they had some sort of backstory stuff like they do on So You Think You Can Dance or any of these other things where they'll have, oh, we shot this stuff at the person's home.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Yeah, so they don't do any of that in the US. And did you miss that? Lawrence, you're pretty clear on this.
No, well, see, like, even when I watch, like, reality cooking competitions and they go, like, to their home and stuff, I fast forward through that crap. I don't like that stuff, right? That's just not my vibe, but maybe someone likes that stuff. It's not for me.
In the traces, it's kind of important. Does if you've got someone with a really good sob story and that will impact how they're treated, like, at the round table or something else, like that, I hate it less in the traces for that reason, that it can be directly relevant.
I like that stuff. I like having background information, but it always does seem like that's a tell for who's going to have more time on the show. Mm-hmm. So if you start caring about that this person was kidnapped in Somalia, then you're going to be paying attention to that person.
Wow.
You know,
they
it's
get,
like, oh, how is that person going to deal with? So anyway, so that kind of stuff actually, I think, feeds into the story pretty well. But at the same time, I have my eye on that person now because they're probably going to be lasting at least a few episodes.
Well, I think it might be just like this is the Australian one. They just had a couple of them per episode. And it was like, this episode is going to do something with this person. So maybe they're going to go home that day. And this is their one time to shine. I was convinced. Right. They were like, in the Australian one, there were three middle-aged people, two men and one woman. The woman was the traitor, you know, so of course she got... But of the two men, one sort of got a lot of screen time right toward the end of the season. The other one, I was convinced, like, did something happen? Did they find out that this guy was a criminal or something? Because they show him almost never. They, like, show him just as seldom as they possibly can and have him say so little. Because, I don't know, maybe just during the editing, they're like, this guy's not photogenic. He doesn't really go anywhere
boring.
On the show.
He's just probably not interesting.
Yeah.
We don't want to feature this boring guy. They'll fall asleep.
Like, they'd be running down lists of people, and they would not name him. And I was like, what? There's a conspiracy in the editing room to excise this guy from the show.
It's like Val Kilmer as Batman. You want to forget he exists.
Just mentioning the editors on this show, they are firing on all cylinders. It is amazing, the choices, like seeing the choices that they make.
Oh, yeah.
I will say this, and it's true for every single season iteration of this show. I absolutely loathe the music. I hate that those songs.
No.
I hate that music. It is terrible to me. It's on the nose. It is not good. Don't like it.
That leads me on to what might be a good final discussion point, which is the tone of the show, which I think is interesting and weird, and I want to know how unique it is, because it is really campy. I feel like the British version is slightly more campy than the American version, even though the American version has reality TV stars and Alan Cumming wearing, like, shiny tartan all the time. Somehow the British version manages to be more campy.
The most absurd. I mean, let's pause there for a second, and let's just talk about Alan Cumming as the host. in the American version. He is so delightful. The stuff that he's wearing is great.
His performance owes a lot, I think, to the presenting style of Richard O'Brien, who hosted a, at the time, very famous, like, cult game show in the UK called The Crystal Maze. Richard O'Brien is also well known as the writer and creator of the Rocky Horror Show and the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, okay.
And he is this, like, fantabulous creature who's always wearing, like, leopard print and making sarcastic comments. It feels like Alan Cummings is, like, taking some notes from him. He is just superb.
Well, doesn't it seem like just the theatricality of Alan Cumming, he got the memo on what the show was supposed to
absolutely
be. Like,
he got the memo.
Absolutely, he got the memo. And
he's having so much fun.
He's having the most fun. He's having the most fun out of anybody by far, I'm sure. But I wonder if that's why they brought in reality celebrities, because they also can be pretty over the top and they get the memo. So I wonder what the show would look like with Alan Cummings and a bunch of
normal people.
You know, normies. You know, what would that look like?
I have no idea.
This is why I prefer Claudia Winkleman, even though Alan Cumming is fantastic and is a treasure. Claudia Winkleman, who's the host on the British version, she has a presence which is weird and off-putting and otherworldly, which I really enjoy, but she is also very motherly.
She is.
And there's a real caring connection that she has with these people, which I think is part of what you need if you have.
And she's very grounded. But man, Alan Cumming, when he comes in after a person's been killed and he takes their little picture off the wall and just like cast that on the ground, he is absolutely delightful as the host of this show.
I feel like the writing could be better for his lines, frankly. But I think that too many of them are,
of
again,
course,
sort
Mark,
of
those cold water all over our love fest.
Explaining basic things about the show.
What is wrong with what he's doing? It's
when
so
I was
fun
to the point where I was trying to fast forward to get to the parts, I would fast forward over everything he had to say because I know he's not actually going to say anything that has informational content. It's just going to be a little bit of mildly jokey.
What's
all the worst bits about this show? It inherits from the genre. So, like, the fact that there is only 20 minutes of actually original content per 45-minute episode, the fact that, like, the stupid challenges that have nothing to do with the game, like, you can just, the show can innovate its way into being something perfect.
So this is why I don't generally watch this kind of show, because I feel like on a narrative show, people worked really hard and they edited their thoughts. Like, this is like reading a novel or something. And some shows, you know, it's okay if they if they're more artsy, more mostly film. Like, oh, I really want to set the scene. I really want to expand something. So that's like reading, you know, a different kind of novel that has more description in it, more. Whereas, so reality TV is just, it's like podcasting, except you can't put it on double speed necessarily.
I completely disagree. I've known people who have worked on reality TV as producers, and they work very hard, man. Like, they go through an editing process, man. Telling you, this is top of the line stuff here. What we're seeing here with the traders is top. Now, it may not be Oedipus Rex. You know, it may not be like Sarah Lynn's book level of editing and writing, but it is good. Pick up Sarah's book. It's really good.
As I was saying it, obviously the editing that goes in one of these podcasts is minimal as compared to we have 4,000 hours of footage that somebody has to make their way through. Of course, yes. I acknowledge as a technical feat that being wonderful. And I prefer, in some ways, a little more extended treatment than like... And the whole thing is it has to be 20 minutes long. Like, that would be kind of ridiculous for this show.
I mean, it is all in the editing. And there's a reason why the guy that for some reason has been sticking around for 8 episodes, who you never hear a peep from, why we don't hear a peep from that guy, you know? And I think, like, you're putting together a narrative from all of that. It's coming from that. It's not coming from the writing. It's coming from the footage. And so they have to put together these stories. And they're using as much predictability as possible by putting in these games and things like that so that they have some sort of a structure. But I don't know. I wonder if Traders is going to change its structure as it goes, because I still don't see the point of those games. I really don't. That's really not where the heart of the show is. It's really in those developing those relationships.
Sort of as a closing, life is too short to watch a lot of reality TV for me. The same as sports. A lot of people like can get completely consumed by sports, but to me, that's like
a
whole realm of stuff.
It is March Madness right now, and you're going to stake out this level. You're going to make this claim right now.
This is
the hill you want to die on.
My personal take. We had a separate sports appreciation episode. Like sports. I will for folks.
It's because you're old. That's what's going on here. You don't have much time left. You're old, and you don't want to watch sports and really good reality. Okay, that's not true. But the fact of the matter is, guys, don't listen to Mark. Listen to this.
How about let me finish my goddamn sentence, buddy?
Man, finish your statement, damn it! Because it's wrong.
I normally look at reality TV, but I found that this, along with like British Baking Show, which we did an episode on, is an exception. That I think, you know, while one might be tempted to fast forward through parts of this.
I'm sorry.
I think that this greatly exceeded my expectations for this kind of thing. I'm really surprised that I like the show and that I will continue to watch more of it. That was all.
I'm sorry. Mark, I take back everything I just said.
But sports still sucks. All right, go ahead, Al.
I was saying exactly the same thing. Give it a go. And I would say the first season of the British version is just spectacular. The twists and turns are incredible. I don't expect the show to top that. But if it does in one of the other seasons I watch, then I'll be happy and not surprised. And yeah, I would never have watched the show if we hadn't done it for the podcast. And I'm now going to watch probably at least 5 or 6 seasons of it.
Wonderful.
Wow.
With subtitles?
From different territories.
Supposedly the French one was a big hit there.
I want to see the Dutch one. Have any of you seen...
There's a Dutch one? There's a Scandinavian one?
Yeah,
right?
Look at the wiki page. They list them all. Yeah. There's 20. He just... And released them all, you know, two different production companies. Obviously, it's not the same people making it. It was just like some guy making real bank off this license.
Yeah. A lot of people working.
Wow.
Maybe they just didn't have time to build more games.
Yeah, I think this show definitely won me over. But I think I'll be jumping the pond and I'll be watching the UK and the Australian versions for sure. I don't know if I'll be the French version or something that takes subtitles. Yeah, this show definitely won me over.
I will just ultimately say the show is clearly good, but give it 5 or 6 episodes, honestly, to really see it cook. Now, I know that's a big commitment. I mean, you can fast forward through the challenges and you'll be fine. But honestly, if you really want to see the show at its peak, like episodes 6, 7, 8, 9, that's where it really gets like chef kiss great. But yeah, watch the show.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. So long.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye, Sarah's book.
Get more Pretty Much Pop at prettymuchpop.com. Get bonus content for every episode at patreon.com/prettymuchpop.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller. Find your next obsession. Or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first 3 audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.